country, nor have I ceded any part of it.
Let's talk. Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, hello and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Danny Tierce Johnson, Gomeroi journalist from Moree in New South Wales. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I extend that greeting all across this beautiful black nation of ours today, particularly down to the Wiradjuri nation, where my guest comes from. Today on the show, we're talking fake art. Aboriginal art is a big business, with both Australian consumers and tourists wanting to take home a memento from down under. That's right, get your fake boomy. However, it's not easy to verify if your boomerang or painting came from an Indigenous artist or if it was made in Indonesia, and it's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are suffering as a result. Around $250 million worth of Indigenous art was sold in 2019-2020, but a report from Australia's Productivity Commission shows only around 1 in 3 items sold were actually produced by an Indigenous artist or business. Wiradjuri woman Jaron Bajant has seen firsthand how Aboriginal artists get cut out of their own market with cheap mass-produced copies, forcing traditional owners out of business. Jaron, welcome to the show, sister.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, sister, mob that out there that don't know or haven't heard of you, tell us a bit about yourself and where you come from and who your mob is.
Yes, well, so my name's Jaron Bajant. I'm proudly Wiradjuri. My family come from Kiara.
Staunch mob there.
Very staunch, proud mob. Born and raised in Sydney, though, but always, you know, go home to Kiara growing up and everything. Lived some time on country as well out that way. But, yeah, now I'm living in Sydney, raising my babies here and acknowledging, you know, I'm on Gammarigal country, so Sydney's Northern Beaches at the moment.
Now, sis, you've had a lot to do with fake art. You've got your own business that you set up, Jaron Street, deadly little shop down there. But you also spearhead a trading black after experiencing some disempowering and harmful impacts of misrepresentation. Can you tell us about trading black, why you set it up, what it is for people out there that don't know what trading black is?
Yeah, sure. So I started my own business, which is an activewear brand, and you know, we feature Aboriginal art and artists on our activewear label. And when I started in business, I really just felt this like massive stranglehold of non-Aboriginal businesses that were misrepresenting themselves as though they were Aboriginal owned, just flooding and saturating the market. Like if you do a Google search and just look up anything, you know, you have to really go into the About Us section to see if they're Aboriginal or non-Aboriginal owned. And I'll tell you what, the first, you know, however many searches are generally non-Aboriginal owned businesses, which tells us a whole bunch of different things. Firstly, it's a targeted approach. Secondly, that, you know, it's paid for, because those positions on those platforms, you don't get them for nothing. These are deliberate efforts to try and, you know, I guess, be front runners in that space. And then I had my own experience with a non-Aboriginal business, and my business sort of, you know, I tried to work with one of them and then they duplicated my product and just took my concept. And yeah, and when I sort of asked them, you know, hang on a second, completely unapologetic about it. So it really was, and that happened very early on in my business journey.
Yeah.
So, you know, when that happened, I thought, you know, we couldn't, there was no legal foothold to come at them with either. So I was like, well, we clearly have a massive issue across the industry. And then, you know, I just out of frustration started an Instagram page and called it Trading Black and started putting some messaging out. And within, I think it was 6 weeks, we had founded 12 members of blackfellas all over the country that had come together to form Trading Black, which is a business collective, because we'd all had our own personal experiences with this type of behaviour.
Yeah, I remember activewear was quite the thing back in the day. Like, I'm talking 5 years ago, 10 years ago now, but all our Aboriginal dance troops, you know, the women were all wearing Aboriginal leggings. It was some gammon company from down the coast there somewhere. That wasn't, I can't even remember the name. I'd name and shame them. I got no shame, just naming and shaming people on black radio. Says, don't worry about that. Might have been Life Apparel or someone like that. I can't remember. But they were Gammon Activewear. And I remember we had an Aboriginal dance troupe down the coast there, and we sort of had a yarn about the fake art stuff. And, you know, one of the sisters said, you know, I feel really uncomfortable wearing these leggings because they're not Aboriginal owned. They're not an Aboriginal company. And I just, you know, feels a bit sort of plastic fantastic when you wear this stuff that's Gammon. You know what I mean?
It's really hard because you look at the, and I think when we talk about fake art industry, we can't not talk about the fake business industry while we're at it, because really it's the fake business models that we're really talking about.
Well, they go hand in hand, don't they?
They really do, and this is where, you know, the voice of Trading Black and the 12 of us that have come together, and not just the 12 founding members, but businesses all across Australia, mob who support this movement as well. You know, this is frustrations, like you say, Denny, this has been felt for years and years and years. Why have we got non-Aboriginal people with a stranglehold on a market that should be, this should be ours?
Exactly.
You know, Aboriginal products should always be the, and Aboriginal-owned businesses should always be the priority around this stuff. And the fact that not only it's saturated by non-Aboriginal business models, but also that they're thriving in the space, something's wrong. Something's got to change.
Yeah, and if you ever go to a Supply Nation event, you know, I've just, it's just smacked me in the face a couple of times, because I've been to a couple of these events reporting on it. And, you know, a couple of the people I spoke to weren't Indigenous at all. Didn't have any Indigenous connections, and just sort of partnered up with somebody to create a business for profit in a certain sector. And then I was like, how come our mob are letting them do this, you know, because they just want to make money, and then it loses integrity from the business sector, and then we have this all this gammon fake art and fake leggings and activewear out there that's, you know, not reflective of us. It's not, our artists aren't drawing those designs, and they're certainly not profiting from you know, this industry.
Yeah, there's definitely like heaps of layered complexities around it. We know black cladding exists.
Yep.
And we know that the what black cladding does as well.
Yep.
Which is very much why, and so there's no ambiguity. That's why Trading Black, we stand to support 100% Aboriginal owned businesses. We operate only really in retail, or mainly in retail space.
Yep.
But there's no ambiguity. Like, if you buy from Trading Black, and of course we went on to start a shopping platform because these questions were asked more and more. Well, where can we find these products, and how do we find these businesses? And, you know, we did this without any support, just a group of grassroots mob that have started out in business, saw a problem, and we've come together to try and solve it. We're up against, you know, everything.
Yeah.
And we're still here doing it. So no ambiguity. You know, when you buy from our platform or our businesses, you know you're buying from 100% black-owned brands, and that's it.
Yeah, and they've been around because, you know, if you're a black fella, you just need to go to your local markets and your local events to see the real black businesses that start as grassroots and just come up through and have grown into a flourishing business like Jarran Street, which has been so good to see, because many of us know your story and the battles that you've had to try and get this going and make it, I guess, 100% authentically Wiradjuri, you know, which is such a battle.
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, there's a whole lot of work that you that has to be done before you even get to the starting point. And, you know, you make mistakes along the way, but I think from the outset, you know, that's why we try to hold ourselves to a threshold of 100% black-owned, so that we know that we're supporting and putting the full weight of our support behind businesses that wholeheartedly want to be in the space and deserve a shot at the market. You know, I'm not saying that there isn't merit in a joint venture, but, you know, there's no ambiguity in our business models.
Yeah, totally agree with that. How do we, you know, have a conversation around black cladding? And I guess, you know, for you guys at Trading Black, you know, black cladding is like your kryptonite. It's, you know, it's something that we need to completely get rid of and have conversations about. But how do we do that? And I guess, is Trading Black trying to play a role in, I guess, eradicating black cladding?
Oh, we're not looking at black cladding. We're not looking at joint venture models. We're here to just really call for transparency from non-Aboriginal owned businesses that misrepresent themselves in the market as Aboriginal owned, or misleading consumers to buy from them thinking that they're buying from an Aboriginal business. That's what we do. And so we don't redirect those customers to buy from, or at least be aware to ask the questions around ownership and feel confident around that, and then let them make their own decisions around where they place their purchase. But I do think I would like to see, you know, labelling of what an Aboriginal business is. To me, an Aboriginal-owned business is 100% Aboriginal-owned. Anything, you know, we've got a government model that says 51% or more owned is an Aboriginal business. I personally think that needs to be changed to a majority-owned business.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be called an Aboriginal-owned business. And I think there's a lot of confusion around that. That's personally what I would like to see, and then at least people understand what the business model is that they're working with.
Yeah, let's make it black and white, you know?
Well, I mean, I just think it needs transparency. Yeah. We need to call for transparency in the space. You know, the joint venture space is not a space that I work in. It's not something that Trading Black sits in, and I think it's a discussion for, you know, a lot of mob to be involved in, but I personally would like to see a relabeling of what an Aboriginal business, or a redefinition of what an Aboriginal business is.
Yeah, because there's been a lot of changes around that in Australia lately with the Australian Made logo and the symbol and what that means. Because years ago it was trademarked to mean something else, but now it's been re-owned again. And that way, if something does have the Australian Made and Owned sort of stamp on it, does mean it's actually Australian Made and Owned. And that's what we need for our business. So there is that transparency, because a lot of our mob out there, they just want to buy black and support black businesses and black families, you know. They don't want to go to Target or Kmart to buy their clothes anymore.
Yeah.
They want to go see Jarrah Street, or they want to go see Take Pride Movement, or Tani Edwards brand down there, Gammon Threads or something like that, you know. I just think there's this thinking now around this that, you know, we just want to buy black and buy it properly, but we need to know what it is, because sometimes it's so hard to tell.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I really would love to see some work being done around the definitions around what an Aboriginal business is now. There's nothing wrong with saying this is a majority-owned business, majority Aboriginal-owned, or shareholders, or however you want to describe it. But to me, an Aboriginal-owned business is 100% Aboriginal-owned.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, because it's so hard, particularly when you're buying art, Jaron. You know, I'm just trying to put my little white hat on here now, but if you're a white fella and you're going down to Circular Quay, you're on holidays, and I was like, oh, I want to buy some art to take back home, some Aboriginal, some First Nation stuff, you know. And then you go into these little stores down Circular Quay or whatnot, and it's just all this sort of, you know, mass-printed stuff that comes out of Indonesia that's sitting in all these stores that's everywhere. And this is a billion-dollar industry, or a quarter of a billion-dollar industry that could be going directly to our mob. But instead, it's just skimmed off the surface into other companies, and we're all missing out on a piece of the pie.
Absolutely. I went and did my own little tour of some of those shops recently, and I went into a whole bunch of them. And it ranged from, you know, fake Indonesian art that said words like, you know, Native Australian, or, you know, it really had like all of these really just awful designs on there, which to, like, that's targeted fake art, right? All the way through to not able to find a single Aboriginal owned product in any of these stores. You know, there's a lot of product that had collaborated with an Aboriginal artist, but was still, you know, non-Aboriginal owned product. And I didn't find one Aboriginal owned product in any of these stores that I went to. All of them were in major tourist spots.
Yep.
So it just goes to show the depth of how much we are being cut out of the business model, which is why I was saying before, you know, like, we can't look at this without looking at misrepresentation of businesses themselves. And recently, you know, I called from the Productivity Commission's report, I was talking about, you know, penalties.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I'm speaking to penalties, of course, there's a lot of work that needs to be done around, you know, what we consider as fake art. But if we look at the targeted business models and the misrepresentation around businesses, there's already legislation that exists that we can put stricter penalties and punitive responses around to hold these businesses accountable. It is possible. But I just don't think we can look at fake art without looking at the business model behind it.
No, and like we said, they're both intertwined. And there's something, a term that you come up with that I just think only a black fella would come up with this, but but it's just, it was cutting and it resonated with me, and it's business blackface.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Can you tell us about what that term means, and particularly for our non-Indigenous audience out there? Because they need to know and understand this. They're the majority of the mob buying our fake art. And so this is a chance for non-Indigenous people out there listening to get some real yarns here and some real education to go and, you know, buy some real art.
Yeah, so business blackface is when you go to buy something that has, you know, it looks like it's got Aboriginal art on it, it's been modelled by, you know, seemingly Aboriginal models, it's got a logo that looks like it's Aboriginal art. Sometimes they're even using language names, but the company or the business itself is not Aboriginal owned. That's just a full-blown blackface business that's saying, look at all this wonderful impact we're having, but really behind the scenes, we're taking that impact. And, you know, the impact might degree and vary from blackface business to blackface business, but the overarching theme is that they're all white-owned. And so what they're doing is a targeted, measured approach to mislead the public to get that purchase. Which is why we just push and encourage so hard for people to do their due diligence. Ask those questions, are you Aboriginal owned? And then make up your own mind as to whether or not you're going to put that purchase there. I think I also want to say, you know, this is deliberate. Like, these moves are deliberate. Like, if you search up online, an Aboriginal-owned business, and we've done this, if you search up an Aboriginal-owned business that you know is black-owned, you'll get redirected to a non-Aboriginal-owned platform.
Really?
Yes.
Righto, Google, I'm coming for you.
This happens.
Wow.
So it's because they're paying for those positions and they're paying for this stuff to happen. So, you know... they're utilising what's at their disposal, which also has to be acknowledged. Heavily resourced. They've got intergenerational business acumen. They've got intergenerational wealth at their disposal. They've got networks. This is all stuff that we haven't traditionally had handed down to us in business. So we're here to provide art for white fellas to go and do with it what they will, these business models, which that's why we coined it, you know, business blackface.
Yeah, I love it because... blackface is a really yuck, you know, racism. It's linked to racism, heavily entrenched racism. And I just think this shames and put a spotlight on business because we both know this, as you said, they're doing this on purpose, you know. So it puts a bit of a shame on them and a bit of a link to racism with their blackface. And I just think business blackface is such a strong term. And it's absolutely spot on to describe what these businesses are doing. And what they're intentionally doing.
Well, and also, you know, their forward-facing pitch is that they're having impact, right? So if you ask, what is your why? Why are you doing this? It's always, you know, we want to give back to Aboriginal community or we want to work with Aboriginal community. Well, where's your end date? Where's your succession plan? Why are you in the way? You know, if we're talking about having real impact to a sustainable future for our mob, then these business models are actively blocking it. That's the reality, because as time goes on, they're going to continue to make money, continue to grow their brand, continue to grow their business. And then when they stop running it, they're going to hand that to their kids. And the artists or those communities that are working with those models, they're handing to their kids an obligation, nothing more than an obligation to work with these mob if that's what continues. You know, there's not a business model to hand over there.
No. And I'm just sorry, I was just doing a search online here just while you're talking.
You're right.
But I just, I Googled Aboriginal activewear, capital A for Aboriginal, by the way, peoples. and so what came up first, so you get the shops, the ads, right, shop Aboriginal. So Flow Yoga, Yarn Marketplace, The Iconic, Life Apparel, Dharma Bungs.
All non-Aboriginal owned.
Yep. So this is what comes up. And then it goes down to the line. The first one is Indigenous Handmade Products. Yarn.com.au. Don't know who they are. Never heard of
them. Yarn and non-Aboriginal.
There you go. Jaron Street comes up second. There we go.
Hey.
Fabella Activewear. Fabella? Yep. I'm not sure if they're Indigenous. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know about them, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like you said, so, you know, if I'm typing Aboriginal activewear, Jarran Street should come up first or, you know, similar business like that. But it's, you're spot on what you say. There's algorithms here that put other businesses up first because they pay for the ads.
Yep. So yep, that's right. And they've got the resources to do it. So, you know, the only way to combat it is to really get behind Aboriginal-owned businesses, do your due diligence and look at the About Us section. I mean, the bush food space, that's a really problematic space.
Yep.
That's got me really worried as well. You know, there's a lot of non-Aboriginal participation in that, and it's a booming industry based on, you know, First Nations knowledge and culture. And we're talking, what are we at? Is it, last I checked, it was less than 2% Aboriginal participation.
It's just unbelievable, this bush food thing. I remember seeing this thing on MasterChef years ago, and, you know, it was like a little witchetty grab or something on the plate, and everyone was going bananas about it, you know, and it's like, oh, here we go. We're paying $100 for a gum leaf in a restaurant soon. You know what I mean? Like, these white fellas just come in. We've been eating witchetty grab for 80,000 years, but, oh, let's sell them for $100 a kilo now. You know, it's just, we're going to see some crazy stuff, but it goes again with the fashion industry, with the art industry and with the bush foods industry. So these non-Indigenous companies coming in, railroading and deliberately trying to just make money and profit just off anything.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, again, going back to that blackface, you know, we've got these businesses that won those South Australian Aboriginal Tourism Awards, and they're bush foods companies owned by white fellas.
Yeah.
But that happened only, what, last year or the year before, you
know?
So it's a deliberate effort to step into the space and undercut Aboriginal people out from leadership. You know, I think it's great that people are interested. I want to say that. I think it's a wonderful thing that we see people and customers and consumers and the broader community interested in wanting to buy and wanting to support. The critical issue here is who's leading the space.
Yeah, you know. And are you guys talking to government at all? I'm just interested because we've got a new government, a lot of Aboriginal senators, you know, and it might be a chance now to actually get some tangible outcomes around the fake art trade, around these bush foods or whatnot. Is Trading Black do any lobbying with government or any meetings that sort of take place to, I guess, you know, sort of stamp out some of the stuff that we've been raising here, sis?
Yeah, we've raised it at a state level and tabled it at a number of business roundtable discussions at the state level. We haven't had any direct federal conversation, but certainly that's something that we as a group are looking at. And definitely now that, you know, we've seen this Productivity Commission's report released, like we need to really be pushing this, not, as I said, in the fake art industry, but business as well. So, yeah, you'll see Trading Black really lobbying harder and pushing for those conversations to be at those levels. But again, you know, we're business owners. Like, we stepped into this because it was something that we saw the need for. So, yes, we're happy as a group to put voice to that as well.
Yeah,
but, you know, we did see, like, Lydia Thorpe recently shared a whole lot about this and really threw her support behind Trading Black as well. So we're seeing that it is reaching politicians, and that's really great to see.
Yeah, and it is a good point to make that you just made. I know I'm sort of throwing all the responsibility at you, Bob, here in this interview, but you are just business owners. You are mothers and fathers. You do have your own lives. But I guess, you know, you might have a sense of responsibility to drive a bit of change around this because you are so passionate about it.
Well, yeah, like, I think the first thing is that as a group, we felt responsible. You know, we can't go past acknowledging every single founding member of Trading Black, Jess Johnson at Nungala. She's been a massive driving force behind this. Claire Watt over in WA, like, and Kerry Shepherd, Crystal Hurst, she's the Gillawarra Arts. Jane Telfar, she's at Earth Jinder, Ginny's Girl Gang, Benny at Tate Pride. I know I'm forgetting someone now.
I've got them out here. I've got Kerry Shepherd.
Yes. Millie Cairns.
I'm on your website here. Jamie Lee Telfer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Regina Jones. Lydia. What was that name?
Liladia.
Liladia. What a beautiful name. Liladia.
Yeah. Yes, amazing designer. You know, we're all out here running our own businesses. And like you say, you know, we all got families. We don't have any financial backing or funding or support from any place to carry out this work. This has all been done on our own. And it's great to hear the messaging sort of reaching those spaces. And we really hope that it's taken up by those spaces too. But we just need as much support as we can get to continue this work. Because as you say, Denny, like, look how many people in community are talking about this. This is affecting a lot of people.
This is $1 billion that have been stolen from our people a year. This is what I look at. And I just think how many mob could own their homes, how many children get bought new shoes each year, have mad lunches in their lunchbox. The little things. Like, this would make so much. If $1 billion went into the hands of our mob, damn, we'd be a happier people, you know?
For me, it's really that investment in the next generation. You know, I am so proud to see the young ones that work in our shop. They're not just learning retail. They want to start their own businesses. Yeah. They're learning about how to manage the store. They're learning about what it takes to run a business. They've got that group mentorship around them and people that are there to help them achieve that. And that's the sustainability that makes me happy. That's the investment that we need to be making. So we talk about that $1 billion. Mm. You know, we're not just talking about that monetary figure, which is massive and would have huge impact, but we're talking about redirecting that into the hands of our young ones who are going to be able to sustain that. That's self-determination.
Yeah, and we are in the era of self-determination, and that's where the change is. And, you know, you should be really congratulated too, Jaron, on the work that you've done the last decade in this space. Whilst raising a family, doing all this, you know, I'm lucky that I've met you before, and I know you, Jan, and I just know what a strong black sister you are, and deserve all the success that comes your way, and the whole Trading Black group. So just from me, you just want to say thanks, sis.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And, you know, I also need to say as well that without the support and I guess the collective of that Trading Black group, none of this work would have been done.
Yeah.
None of it.
And
definitely a group effort.
Yeah, user on the Insta, Trading Black, and it's just that member mob out there. There's no C in black. It's just black with a K. And you can go to tradingblack.com and just learn more about them. You can check out, they've all got profiles. You can see why they're set up, what they want to do, what they want to achieve. And it's just a beautiful black thing of sisters of one little brother Benny in there. hey, sis, as I do on my show, I always like to go out on a bit of a high, a bit of a laugh. Having a mad chat. But I just want you to tell me about the Aboriginal fashion industry. So you've been down there fashionistering it up. I've seen some mad pics. I know Jess Johnson has sort of been your fashionista. But you guys look amazing when you just go down there. And if you give us a little insight of the world of the Aboriginal fashion industry, because you've created your own little niche down there, haven't you?
Yeah, it's very exciting, I'll say that. You know, I'll also just make sure I say that Trading Black, we're in business retail, so the fashion space is sort of the next step over.
Yep.
But a lot of mob you're seeing that are stepping into fashion and delivering on runways, like Australian Fashion Week, my gosh.
Yeah.
It fills me with pride and joy when I'm seeing mob on these platforms. Like, you're walking around places like Country Road or David Jones or wherever, and seeing Aboriginal models, that representation there is everything.
Yeah.
I am pretty early in my personal fashion, I suppose, journey. I never thought of myself as a fashionista. I always rock around in pair of nice
shirts. Nah, sis, I seen the photos you put up. I was like, my sister Jaron, big fashionista down there now. She'd gone from the yoga store down to the catwalk. Look out.
I call it my gam and bougie argument. But I feel just proud. Like, Jess's stuff, Nungala Creative, what she's producing and putting out on the runways is just incredible. Everyone's doing amazing stuff. Lilati as well, I just need to shine a spotlight on her. Her stuff is incredible too. So, yeah, you're just seeing a real pride and ownership and leaning into that space of mob expressing through fashion. And it has been done before. I do want to say that. We did see this, 20 years ago, there was a big fashion movement as well around Aboriginal designers. But yeah, I don't know. At this point, I like to be a supporter, and it makes me really proud and happy. And I've got kids now who want to, you know, be in fashion. So yeah. It's having impact.
Yeah, that's deadly. Yeah, my little brother's a part of it, the little Tyrone Pienaar. And I was there when he first started NITV. So when day one when he got the job, he came out with me on a boat, of all things. And so I've watched him grow and I've watched him learn over the years. And to see where he's come now to be this fashion icon, it's just lovely to see, because I love blackfellas expressing themselves and just standing in their light and just being nothing but beautiful black men and women. It's just, like you said, sis, it's that real pride and joy. And, you know, I just celebrate it.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. And Tyrone's wonderful. He's just so lovely. And at the end, when you go to these fashion shows, you know, you can't stop smiling. Your cheeks hurt that much at the end of it because you're just so happy when you see it all around.
I know. Yeah. Just my head would explode. There's just too many beautiful black people there for me. Oh, Uncle have a heart attack. sister, been good to chat with you. I know you're super busy, so thanks for giving me some of your time today. And if anything happens in the future, Trading Black or the fake art world, can you please come and jump on for a yarn, please, sis?
Yeah, we will. Happy to. Thanks for having me, brother.
No worries. So go to tradingblack.com, your mob. Check it out. Check out Jarran Street too. You still got your shop in Warringah or somewhere over there?
It's a Trading Black store at Warringah Mall, so come visit us at Brookvale there.
Yep, over at Brookvale, over the Manly Sea Eagles, let's not talk about that. but you can go to jarranstreet.com.au. You can check out all our activewear there. I bought my little sis some a while ago, so, you know, get it there, my people. Support 100% black business and strong sisters like Jarran. Thanks for listening to our fake art yarn today on Let's Talk on AAA Murray Country.